You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, you're listening to another episode of More Perfect Marketing, the show that I named after the concept of a more perfect union in the U.S. Constitution, which really is all about incrementally getting better day by day, inch by inch. And we all need to be doing that in our marketing. Today, we're going to be talking about an interesting topic. And I was going to say, you know, the word of the day, maybe because I was thinking about Sesame Street this morning. I have no idea why. But the word of the day is value. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that word with today's guest. I'm going to be speaking today with Megan Brame, who is joining us after years working in a whole slew of areas, luxury goods, nonprofits, and a whole bunch of other stuff. But today she is a five-time award-winning advanced digital marketing strategist who now, rather than working with large organizations, is working with entrepreneurs who are in the midst of developing marketing campaigns that she helps them with, creating what she calls ride or die fans for life. I'm curious to know more about that and more about value. Megan is also the host of her own podcast, awesome name, Stop Sucking at Business. Megan, welcome.
Don't forget, there's also Pee Wee Herman's word of the day too.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yes. Thank you for the reminder.
As soon as you said that, I thought, yeah, oh, Pee Wee Herman. But I am thrilled to be here. Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
So one of the things that struck me when I ran to your website to sort of see what you do and all that was you use the phrase, and you use it on your podcast as well, value-based when mm-hmm. it comes to marketing. Can you help us understand what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I started getting into marketing, I realized that a lot of entrepreneurs get afraid of it. They get very overwhelmed. They think it's a sort of black hole where you just throw money and time in and you hope something happens, but who knows? So when I started thinking about how I wanted to position myself, I thought about how can I make people understand that marketing isn't about being salesy or feeling like you're, you know, putting one over on somebody. It's about how you deliver a transformation to your clients. And you do that by giving them additional value. So value-based strategy, like creating blog posts that aren't sales, but help people keep you top of mind because you become the authority in this space. And that's my strategy, basically, just making sure that even if my clients have customers who aren't ready to buy at that time, when they are ready to buy, they're the ones that they go to because they have received so much additional value that there's no one else in the marketplace for them.
So I often talk about this word value when I'm saying, oh, well, part of the initial engagement with somebody is collecting their contact information so you can follow up with them. And the way mm-hmm. you do that is exchanging their contact information for value. Mm-hmm. So now I know what I'm talking about. Thanks to you. I appreciate it.
Happy to help. But you're so right. You know, when you're getting their contact information, that is, especially now, it's sacred, right? And so you have to make sure that you are giving them something in exchange for that contact information, because especially now with everyone terrified of Facebook ads and privacy things, it's even more important that you are giving them something for that precious information.
So, you know, coming from the background that you have working with large organizations and then transitioning a few years ago to working with small businesses, entrepreneurs, I think a lot of small businesses don't have the budgets to do mm-hmm. what large organizations do, but also don't necessarily have great examples to model after. And so they're trying to imitate things that are not necessarily appropriate to their size and scale or their needs. Mm-hmm. How do you help an entrepreneur sort of approach marketing just broadly? What are the things that you have to cover to begin with?
I think that first it's getting rid of the idea that you are at a disadvantage because you don't have a giant marketing budget. I think honestly that is to an entrepreneur's advantage, because people buy from people, especially now, thanks to social media and transparency and all of these things where we want, you know, we want the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. We want to talk to that person and make sure that we align with their values and that we, you know, we feel good about supporting that business. So it's so much easier for solopreneurs or small business owners to do that because you are the business. It's not, you know, a marketing team and a sales team and a finance team. It's you doing a lot of that stuff, but it helps you create a better connection. So I think that I usually try and reframe people's mindsets about that to not think that they are, you know, David and Goliath. They are actually in a really perfect position to create, like I said, those ride or die fans, the ones that just follow you through thick or thin and only come to you. So that's usually where I start with that.
Okay. Now let's circle back to this concept of value, because I think that the value, whether it's a blog post or a social media post or any other ways of communicating value, right, mm-hmm. that enters into this equation in a big way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the way that I like to frame it is that marketing is not, up in an ivory tower or something. Marketing is about having a conversation with your ideal customer and showing them how their lives can be transformed through using your product or your service. That's all it is. It's not about, I mean, it's about data because I love data and I'm sure you do too, but it's about just making sure that you are speaking their language. You are making sure that you are talking to the right people who get it and you're emphasizing why they get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, you said the right people. And that's, yeah. I think, also very important for a lot of small businesses to understand, because that's a place where you can save a lot of money if you're talking to the right people. How do you do that in terms of, you know, content online or the way that you're positioning your business?
And also, you know, you save money, but you save a lot of stress too.
This is true, yes.
Because I know in the beginning, you just, whoever's going to give me money, great, please give me money. But it becomes such a hassle. So what I like to do with this is, unfortunately, this is the homework part of marketing. This is where you have to sit down and talk about, who is this ideal person? Who's this person that's going to get what I'm doing and the person that I can help the most? So you have to build that avatar. I know that a lot of people just kind of want to wing it as they go and see just, well, maybe we'll see who this appeals to and we'll kind of, you know, make it up along the way. But it's putting yourself to a disadvantage to not start with, okay, I know who I want to talk to. I know how to talk to them. I'm going to go talk to them. So that's usually how I kind of try to position it.
I know how to talk to them. Mm-hmm. Talk more about that. Cause that I think is probably an area where it can get a little confusing for a business, right?
Absolutely.
What perspective do they use, for example?
So it's the way that I like to frame it is that think of it like different demographics of age groups. So the way you would talk to someone who is a baby boomer is very different from how you would talk to someone who is in Gen Z. There's a different language, there's different slang, there's different values. They're in different stages of their life. And so when you're thinking about who your ideal customer is, that's a big thing that you have to think about. Who am I targeting and what is going on in their specific age group? And how can my product or service fit into that to help make it better?
So let's talk about a practical example of this, because you are helping businesses with that positioning. Now, a lot of the stuff that happens these days is online, so we'll probably be using online examples, but don't get caught up in the online piece of it, folks. A lot of this still can happen in the offline world, direct mail and you know, print mm-hmm. advertising and billboards and all of that. Although they may not be the right, you know, channel for you. So mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about, you know, an example of that. You know that I work with financial advisors a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they are looking to connect with a client. Hopefully mm-hmm. they're not looking for anybody and everybody who wants to invest money and prepare for retirement, but they're looking for somebody more specific. Mm-hmm. What would the process be for them mm-hmm. to sort of think about putting themselves out there publicly? identifying that ideal avatar, that client mm-hmm. that they want to be working with, and then communicating with them through value. Can you sort of walk through some steps of what might be involved there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is for financial advisors, the easiest way to start out is to go for the low-hanging fruit. I think that so many advisors, in my opinion, and you can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, are probably going to be targeting Gen X to baby boomers who are looking to retire. So they've been through the steps, they know a lot about, you know, the risk that they're willing to take and things like that. And they're sort of, you're in a much more saturated marketplace. But I think that if someone starting out or someone looking to expand their business instead starts thinking about, what if I created a brand of financial services that targets millennials or targets Gen Z? They have a very different approach to how they're investing their money. They're trying to pay off student loans. They're trying to start saving for a house. They don't have the financial expertise that someone who is of the older generation would. And so that gives me low-hanging fruit. That gives me an in to become this authority in this space, because not a lot of people are addressing this. And I can start utilizing that to not only separate myself in the marketplace, but also to become this resource for these people who will eventually, hopefully soon, start acquiring wealth and start needing additional services like retirement planning, like that. So that's how I would suggest starting that out. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, or is I think that so. And you gave some really good examples of the specific things that maybe somebody who's younger is thinking about. You know, mm-hmm. in the advisor world, they're looking for low-hanging fruit, but they're looking for low-hanging fruit with money, which right. usually means that they have to be older. But the point about specificity is well taken, because you can take that and, you know, the baby boomers mm-hmm. is such a large generation that there's plenty of opportunity there. But when you get narrow, as you've identified, there's a lot of ways to start a conversation around something super specific.
Absolutely. And especially if you decide later on you want to start an advertising strategy or something like that, you're going to save so much money on your ad spend because you're targeting this untapped market of people who are looking for something like this and don't have any avenue to get financial advice.
All right. You said something really interesting there. Later, when you think about starting advertising. So there's something behind that. you're I think suggesting that maybe that's not the first place to go. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. In my opinion, I think that organic strategy is the way that you start. You need to figure out who you're talking to, how you're talking to them, what problems are you solving for them? And then once you nail that down, then in my opinion, you go to an advertising strategy. This is what's going to save you your cost per clicks, your CPMs, all of those things, because you're understanding how the person who most needs your services is going to act, where they're looking for things, where how they're utilizing different online platforms or things like that. And that's going to save you so much time, effort, and energy, really.
So let's talk a little bit about organic strategy, mm-hmm. because that's I think nomenclature in the marketing world that the average, you know, Main Street business owner may not know. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? I mean, I think most of us, at least most of us in the marketing world, know the business owner who says, well, my nephew said I need to be on TikTok, so I'm doing that, right? And maybe that's correct, and maybe it isn't. Depends on the type of business you have and who you're trying to reach. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about organic strategy. What does that entail? What does it include? And how do you do it?
I think that the best way to define organic strategy is you're trading time for money in this. And this is the buildup to when you start eventually advertising. So organic strategy would be social media. I was thinking digital, and then I was like, let me think about offline too. So digital with social media, blog posts, talking in forums on Reddit or, you know, other communities, things like that, Clubhouse now. And then offline is networking events, is, you know, getting your name out in the world and taking the time to make connections and start speaking engagements or things like that. That is what I define as an organic marketing strategy. It's when you're utilizing your time, to get the word out rather than just paying to, I guess, skip the line.
So how do you know where to spend that time? What's working and what's not?
I think it's, so cover digital marketing first. And I think that you made the perfect point about, well, my nephew says I should be on TikTok, so I'm going on TikTok. When I was a director of marketing for a corporation, I would get in fights, like go in your corner and go sit down for a minute, fights about where we would be spending our time on social media. The corporation that I was a director of marketing at was a professional services where we would do like headhunting and recruiting for executive clients. And they wanted to be on Instagram. And I would fight them and say, we're not going on Instagram. C-suite people aren't going on Instagram to look for jobs. They're going there, if they are on there, they're going there for pictures of plants, for, you know, FOMO, shiny objects, for all of these, you know, house pictures, things like that, aspirational things. They're not going on Instagram looking for jobs. They're going on LinkedIn as a social media platform, if we're picking social media platforms. They're going on YouTube for business advice. They're going on podcasts. They're not looking at Instagram. They're not looking at TikTok. So that's where I usually start recommending people think about their online marketing strategy. Instead of trying to be everywhere, think about who your ideal client is, where they go online, and how they utilize those platforms. The way they utilize Pinterest is vastly different from the way they'll utilize Twitter. And so you have to think about, where can I get in easily? What is going to be the easiest for me to develop a consistent message? And then you can expand from there. But I usually recommend you start with one, and a realistic one or two platforms. And really just once you nail those down and develop a consistent message, have an engaging conversation with people, start, you know, having the back and forth with your ideal clients, then you can start expanding. But don't feel like you have to be everywhere. Be where your people are and use the platform the way that they use it.
So you said earlier that you love data. And so I'll go back to the question of what you just described is great. How do you know if it's working?
That's an excellent question. I think that it varies, honestly. And I hate that answer, but
that's my favorite answer, by the way, is, well, it depends.
And so much of marketing is like that, you know, 10 Twitter followers isn't $10 in profit. It is much more nuanced than that. So it really has to depend on what your goals are for that social media platform. So just talking about LinkedIn, for example, if you're looking to promote your financial services on LinkedIn, you have to start thinking about, what am I going to use this for? How am I actually going to develop this? Is it sales or is it connections? How do I make that into a data point? So I'm getting this many clicks on my website that are coming from LinkedIn, or I have this many connections who I'm talking to, or I've started this many discovery calls with people from LinkedIn. Those are the data points you start to analyze, and then you can benchmark whether it's succeeding off of those rather than just a whole, is it working? I don't know. Well, how are you defining working? And then you go from there.
It is classic when I make a recommendation to a client about a channel that they might consider, they'll say, I tried that, it doesn't work, right? Yeah. And so what you've just said is kind of important is, well, what are you tracking? How do you, what was your goal? What was the outcome you were trying to, you know, realize from that activity? So that's great. We're tight on time. I know that you have to wrap up and get on with your day, as do I. But I'm sure that folks are interested in knowing a little bit about what you do and how you might be able to help them and where they can find you if they want to know more.
So they can hit up meganbrame.com. That's my hub. That's where everything is. Or betterbizschool.com. That's where all of my courses and downloads are available. But what I do is I help entrepreneurs develop marketing strategies that don't suck, that create this conversation with their clients so that they get that ride or die platform where people are just thinking of them as the authority. That's my job. That's what I love to do. And that's how I help other entrepreneurs.
Excellent. So if you're interested in meeting Megan, learning more about her, head over to Megan Brame. That's MEGANBRAME.com.
None of that H stuff in Megan. No, absolutely.
Excellent. Megan Brehm, thank you so very much for spending some time and sharing some of your insight and experience with us. And I look forward to having the opportunity to learn more from you.
Thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Indeed. So folks, you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. I'm David Baer. Thanks for spending some time with us. And I look forward to seeing you on a future episode.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.